time on Vet Story. We'll talk beards and baseball with Washington Nationals relief pitcher Sean Doolittle.
Mine was growing in this glorious ginger red that I didn't know was in there.
And U.S. Marine Corps veteran MARSOC Raider Nick Carnese, founder of the beard grooming products line Stubble and Stash.
You know, and in high school, that's pretty much what you're focused on, whether it's yourself, sports, or girls, right?
And it started to get out of control. You know, I needed something. I needed something for it, you know? Like, I needed a way to tame it somewhat.
And we'll save the names, but this young lady is awesome. I don't want to embarrass her. She reached out to me. She's like, oh my God, Nick, I met this guy. He's amazing. He has a glorious beard.
What was it like growing up with an Air Force veteran dad? Was he tough? No crying in baseball, damn it. I mean, was he that kind of dad?
When I was growing up, I didn't really understand it. I didn't agree with it. I kind of pushed back on it.
Nick, too, I mean, you've been with the special operations community, you know, probably disproportionately affected by some of these issues.
If you were to come forward and admit that you are experiencing symptoms of post-traumatic stress or anything like that, you could lose your security clearance.
The conduct that got them the bad paper discharge could be directly traced back to their service.
Take a cue from hockey, and if it gets bad enough, you guys could just throw down, and then you get 2 minutes to sit out, and then we're done. Okay?
Doesn't that sound ridiculous?
Sean, Nick, welcome to Vet Story. Damn glad you guys are here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
Let me start. I typed up a fancy intro. Can we do my intro? You're used to major network television. You know how they always have the produced packages at the very beginning?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. Sean Doolittle, ace relief pitcher for the Washington Nationals, son of an Air Force veteran, and distant cousin to World War II legendary pilot, Lieutenant Commander Jimmy Doolittle, who led the harrowing mission known as Doolittle's Raid. A retaliation to Pearl Harbor. In April of 1942, cousin Jimmy flew bombers off the flight deck of the USS Hornet, striking Tokyo with bombs, invigorating the entire nation, crash landing in China, and living to tell about it. Now, generations later, you, kind sir, are a professional baseball pitcher. I'm sure cousin Jimmy is proud.
Oh my gosh.
No, and I'm sure he is, man. You're a relief pitcher for the damn Washington Nationals. It thrills me to know you, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that military story in just a second. And Nick Carnese, you've already been a guest, so you don't get fancy intro music.
Hey, it works for me.
Former Naval Academy grad, as I said in the intro, MARSOC Marine Intel Officer, Crayon Eater, and a founder of... I just threw that in there because... We're Navy Marines. I bust on them all the time. Yes, founder of Stubble and Stash, and killer story dedicated and in honor, tribute, and you know, constant remembrance of your bro who gave the ultimate sacrifice in Afghanistan, Justin.
Yep.
And you know, since then, since you know, that fateful day, you've been growing the beards out, and now supporting bearded badasses everywhere with the Vet Beards and a line of grooming products called Stubble and Stash. Nick, friend of the show, man, glad to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Let's start off with how we're here together. Okay, both beards. I know how we know each other through Stubble and Stash and through veteran service. Sean, how did you guys get connected? How do you guys, I mean, how do these two worlds combine?
Well, I guess it started back when I started growing a beard. I'd never had a beard before. In college and coming up through the minor leagues, I had to be clean shaven, and I got to the big leagues in 2013, and the bullpen said we're gonna grow beards, we're gonna do a bullpen thing, and we're all gonna grow beards, and so I started growing it. By the time the season started, most of the other guys had given in and shaved it, whether it was too itchy or it was out of superstition, they had a bad outing, they shaved it, they got rid of it, but. Mine was growing in this glorious ginger red, that I didn't know was in there. And, so I decided to keep it and I just didn't cut it for several months. And it started to get out of control. And, I think, you know, I needed something for it, you know, like I needed a way to tame it somewhat. What was that? 2014?
Yeah. Do you remember? A girl was trying to impress him.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think you're at Walter Reed.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we'll save the names, but this young lady is awesome. I don't want to embarrass her. She reached out to me. She's like, oh, my God, Nick, I met this guy. He's amazing. He has a glorious beard. I want to give him some product. I'm like, okay. And I think that's how you first got your hands on it.
That's it.
And I mean, she's awesome, but she didn't know, you know, she didn't know more than just like, here's this amazing guy doing great work with veterans and he has an awesome beard and never heard of this company before. And she wanted to, you know, get some goodwill from him, you know, because she doesn't know, maybe he's single, right? No. but yeah, I remember when she reached out about that. I was like, this is awesome.
That's cool. But it also flashes me back to Kevin Costner's movie, For the Love of the Game, right? You know, where, I mean, it's, that actually happens for some ball players, not you, Sean, but that's got to be a hazard of the game, right? I mean, like, you're in the Holiday Inn bar at the end of the night, you know, you finish your game, nobody else to talk to, and everybody's, hi, what's your name? Does that really happen?
I can't say if it happens or not. I'm very happily married, so I wouldn't know.
Okay. That would explain a lot of crappy performances on the ball field sometimes, you know, where you just can't excuse, like, why did the guy not hit? Come on. You really 0-for-7? Come on. And then maybe it's because he spent a little too much time in the lounge and not enough time, you know, in the batting cage.
Not enough discipline, right?
That would be me. I would be a washout, even in the minors. The second somebody knew my name and wanted to buy me a drink or give me grooming oil for my beard, I'd forget it. Okay. Beards in baseball. It used to be a postseason thing when, you know, guys got into playing in late September and October, and then you'd see the beards really come out because out of superstition, like, they don't shave, right? Is it now are a lot of players just embracing it and it's like a thing? Like,
yeah, it's a
year round.
It's a thing. Yeah, like playoff beards, what you mentioned, they're big in hockey. It probably is the biggest sport, but they're also pretty big in baseball. Baseball players are incredibly superstitious, and that's one reason that a guy might grow his beard out. But I think we're just seeing guys now over the last maybe 5 years or so, just kind of doing it to maybe show their personality a little bit. Several teams have kind of loosened the reins on some of their team rules or their grooming standards or whatever you want to say. But and I think some guys are just taking advantage of that, and I think it's cool because you get to kind of see. Like I said, it kind of just shows the guy's personality, and there's it seems like there's one or two, you know, really good beards on every team now.
Yeah, and the Nats were impressive. I'll say this, you know, you guys have some really good beards on there. Thinking of yours, we'd be remiss if we didn't say Harper. You know, he's got a solid beard. Tanner he had a really good beard.
Yeah, Tanner and Sean Kelly, you know, both have really good beards. Tanner Strasburg has a pretty good beard.
Strasburg,
yeah, I'm trying to get him to maybe grow it a little longer. I think it could look really cool.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, like Tanner's, get it to where Tanner's at.
You know, I miss is Worth.
I mean,
oh, yeah. He was scary Jesus out there, man. That thing was bad.
I'll tell you, when I got traded over here, I was super intimidated by him. He was like the guy that I was like a little nervous about going to, you know, introduce myself to. You know, he just has this look about him, you know, but, he was an incredible, you know, leader for this team. And I'm very lucky that I got a chance to play with him.
Yeah. Wishing him the best. Right on. Rendon does kind of a crossover thing with his facial hair. I like it. You know, he can go beard, he can go, you know, goatee. I mean, he can slick it up. It can look real aerodynamic. And as you can see here, Nick, and don't bust my chops, but I mean, I don't have a lot of facial hair going on, but what I do have is neatly trimmed like a baseball field. I got the soul patch here in the center. Is that respectable? Does Anthony Rendon get respect for his facial hair, or do you guys tease him?
No, I liked his look. He's got the full like goatee that comes down, you know, several inches. You know, especially last year when he had long hair last year. When he paired it with that, it looked really scary.
He's dreamy. Nick, you're in the beard business. Is a goatee okay? I mean, Can a vet rep a goatee and still be legit, or do we need to grow the 101st Airborne?
No, that's your personal style. I think some guys are like, oh, you have to grow your beard out. Some guys don't believe in like maintaining it, but like this is a representation of your personality, so whatever works for you. You know, I'm not going to judge you because you have that cute little flavor saver down there.
It's a soul patch! And while we're on that, when we'll put pictures up with this podcast as well, but while it's a very neatly grimed, almost transparent kind of chin hair that I have as it's white, I refer to the look with the transparent chin hair and the soul patch right here. I refer to it. I got a name for it. I want to try this out on you. It's the smooth criminal.
I like it. I don't know if I like it because it scares me or I like it because I genuinely like it.
That's awesome. All right, let's get to other things we like. Before we get into the good deeds you do, Sean, because there's a lot to talk about with what you're doing for veterans. I really appreciate it. One of the cool things I really have liked about your story and what I like about what you're putting out there is, I'll just play it. It's this. Now it's Metallica. I'm kind of requesting permission to use this in the podcast as I play it. So please, no lawsuits. Come on. We love you guys. You came to the Nationals from the Bay Area, from the Oakland days. You met Metallica. Talk to me about that.
I've had the privilege, I guess, of meeting him several times. Ever since my rookie season, I've used a Metallica song as my intro. So when I come out of the bullpen, they play Metallica.
Right,
and in 2015, when I was with Oakland, we had a giveaway. It was a garden gnome, similar to a bobblehead, but it was a gnome kind of figurine where I'm throwing up the metal horns. I'm wearing a Metallica shirt, and in the base of the figurine there's a speaker that played Metallica, and in order to do all that stuff we had to get permission from the band. And
right.
I got to know their manager and some of the people that work with them, and I've been to a couple shows and I've gotten to meet them. Actually just caught up with them. We were in San Francisco and it was Metallica Day at AT&T Park. So it's been really cool. I'm pretty sure they prep the guys when I get ready to see them, because like they talk to me like we're friends, and I really appreciate them, you know, kind of humoring me and remembering my name and stuff like
hey,
that.
Hey, Sean, good to see you again, bro. Hey, how's the wife? How's the foundation?
Insert name here. It's been really cool. I've gotten to see kind of their headquarters in the Bay Area, their, you know, top secret metal laboratory, which is really cool. So. I mean, for me, I grew up a metalhead. That's kind of how I was raised. My dad kind of introduced me to that music at a really early age, and they're probably, you know, my favorite band. So to have met them, you know, a few times is really, really cool.
And they're friends of baseball, too, which I found very cool that, you know, you say that, like, what is it, annually? You know, they'll go to a Giants game and they'll do you know, the anthem, and that they've got, you know, Metallica night. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mariano Rivera, Yankees closer, probably the best closer of all time, used Enter Sandman as his intro song. And during his last season, they actually played the song live at Yankee Stadium. They're big baseball fans. They're big sports fans. I've seen them at Raider games in the Bay Area when I was out there. They're sports fans.
Yeah.
They get it.
And it's a cool combination too, because I remember coming up, and I'm a little bit older than you, but I do remember coming up when metal was this thing that, like, you know, you were a metalhead or you were jock, and like the metalheads and the denim jackets and were smoking in high school. And then there's the jocks and the leather jackets, and they're like, hey, you burners, whatever, you know? And now all that stuff comes together, and music and sports are just like fused together. Excuse me, that was my days of high school smoking.
Bring back some memories.
I want to talk a little bit about your history. And interestingly enough, you don't remember some of the history that I first found about you, but you know, were in South Dakota. Your dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
I got my radio start in South Dakota.
Oh, that's right.
I was the first person to play Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre on the radio in Rapid City, South Dakota. And your dad was stationed at Ellsworth. And while you were just a kid, you don't remember it. I wanted to ask, What was it like growing up with an Air Force veteran dad? Was he tough? Was he that typical kind of strict military parent?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I mean, attention to detail was really important. Paying attention to, like, you know, curfew. Like, if he said be home at 9 o'clock and I was home at 9:02, like, well, I was grounded and I had, you know, had to give away the keys because, you know, I'm late. So if you're on time, you're late. You know, everything was very, everything was regimented. It was disciplined. At the time, when I was growing up, I didn't really understand it. I didn't agree with it. I kind of pushed back on it. I was a kid, but I didn't really know. But as I grew up, I got older. Looking back on it now, I'm very grateful for it. I think it kept me kind of out of trouble for one, but it also taught me, you know, a lot of things that, you know, I've been able to use later on in my life. So yeah, it wasn't always the easiest, but you know, I'm very grateful for it.
Right on. And it served you well too. Was he tough on training? Was he kind of involved in your sports upbringing as well, like making you stay focused? And if you're going to start this sport, Sean, yeah, don't quit. I know T-ball's tough, but no crying in baseball, damn it. I mean, was he that kind of dad?
Super. Yeah, he was super hands-on and very into whatever sport my brother and I were playing at the time. He was usually our coach, or at least on the coaching staff. He was helping out in some capacity. We had, you know, we had the basketball hoop in the driveway. We had a batting cage in the backyard that we strung up from some trees in our backyard. And it was something where he never like made us play a sport. He never made us join a team. But if we wanted to do it, he was going to make sure that we went all in and we saw it all the way through and that we maximized our potential, you know, the best that we could. And, you know, having somebody there, that was that supportive, I think kind of it helped me out so much. It helped my brother out so much. You know, my brother and I were able to play on several teams where my dad was the coach. And, you know, growing up, that was something that we definitely bonded over. And I think I learned a lot, not just about baseball or basketball or whatever sport it was, while, you know, I didn't just learn a lot about the sport, but I found out later, as I got older, I learned a lot about, you know, how to do things the right way, how to pay attention to details, how to be thorough and do things with a purpose, you know, rather than just going through the motions.
And Nick, your upbringing had to be similar too, because, you know, getting into the special operations field of the Marine Corps and being an intel officer, I mean, like, you guys couldn't cut corners. I mean, you know, you're just not forgetting to pack something when you're on the AFPAC border. And like, does anyone have, you know, I forgot my extra clip. I mean, you're not forgetting shit like that.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, when I was growing up, my real mentorship came from, I was a member of a Marine Corps Junior RTC program at my high school, which, going into high school is the first year, and I kind of, you know, had that little judgment about like Jay Rotzy kids, right? But it turned out to be an amazing organization. And at the time, my home life wasn't exactly ideal. My parents were going through a pretty gnarly divorce, but I had two Marines, Major Barker, who recently passed away, and Colonel Romero, and they were that stand-in, like, father figure type when it comes to like that type of discipline, and really, really kept me in line. I have some memories of discipline being enforced, like, you know, reinforcing all those different things, the attention to detail, being selfless. You know, not thinking about yourself, you know, and in high school, that's pretty much what you're focused on, whether it's yourself, sports, or girls, right? So, yeah.
The top three, right? Well, needless to say, you guys obviously had some good mentorship and some good attention to detail because you guys have gotten to the top of your fields. I'm kind of questioning. Maybe they were too lenient on me. I only got as far as radio in this studio right here, so maybe I should have rethought.
Hey, this is an awesome studio.
Hey, real quick, I know we teased it in the very beginning, but I did want to ask, and maybe I should just, you know, bring back the Hollywood music. Lieutenant Commander Jimmy Doolittle, the tide that turned World War II. Doolittle's Raid. Is that really a true story? I mean, obviously, I know in history it's a true story about the, you know, famous raid off the, you know, the deck of the USS Hornet. Really a familial connection there? He's in your family.
Yeah, he's a very distant cousin, seventh cousin, I believe. I really, it was always something that I was aware that I was related to him while I was growing up. You know, we did, my brother and sister and I seemed to do you know, like a, maybe a book report on him like once a year, it seemed like, in like grade school. And we were always aware that we were related to him, but no one could ever quite nail down the actual connection. And when I got to the Bay Area, I was playing for the A's. I wanted to go visit the USS Hornet. It's docked in Alameda. It's actually not that Hornet. That Hornet that he flew off was sunk at Guadalcanal. They rebuilt a Hornet that to finish out World War II, and now it's docked in Alameda, in the Bay Area. And I wanted to go over there, and they had kind of politely asked me, they were like, they wanted to do like a segment for it, and they really wanted me to be able to nail down the connection in the family tree. So I had to do some homework before I was able to go visit the Hornet. And so I started out on Ancestry.com, but I ended up tracking down a genealogist who helped me kind of connect the dots, and seventh cousin. So
very cool.
Really cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Really cool.
And the story, you know, it's such an inspiring story. And I know, Nick, you know, you and I as veterans love military history, so we kind of know it. And
oh, yeah.
I was talking to my wife about it the other night, and it's so funny when we got done and I explained, you know, this whole thing about, you know, they didn't have enough fuel and they weren't sure where they were going to land and they had to crash and one went to Russia and the other guys landed in China and then, you know, they endured being captives and then finally released, I mean, being POWs. The whole story is just magnificent glory to a veteran. And my wife goes, oh, you mean like at the end of Pearl Harbor with Ben Affleck? Yeah. You know that? He's like, and I was like, yeah, he's related to the dude played by Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Christ, that's... Yep.
That's where I end up. Like if I'm talking to like my teammates about it or something, and they like, I'll tell them the whole story and they're just kind of like looking at me like with this, like, you know, their mouths open. They're just
that
like,
actually
what
happened?
And I'm like, have you ever seen Pearl Harbor? Alec Baldwin, that guy, that's the guy. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes you gotta meet people where they are.
You do. All right. You've done some other great work. And I wanted to ask you about the bad paper discharge. I wanted to reach out to you last year and our schedules couldn't quite connect, but you were on, I want to say a year ago, Memorial Day with ESPN.
Yeah.
And you were talking a little bit. I just want to play a little clip here about your work with bad paper discharges.
You guys wrote a piece together for SI.com about the many veterans who don't have the help or benefits they deserve after serving their country. Sean, why are hundreds of thousands of veterans experiencing these issues right now?
Well, this is an issue with bad paper. And with all the work that we've done with military veterans over the years, both of us come from military families. We kept coming across the statistics regarding suicides in the veteran community. And we wanted to figure out maybe why that was going on. And one issue that kept coming up was the issue of bad paper. And what bad paper basically is service members who are discharged from the military for alleged misconduct. And it's an other than honorable discharge or it's a less than honorable discharge. And what it does is it strips them of their status as a veteran in the eyes of the VA, which in a lot of cases bars them from accessing any VA services.
So in that, you reference that we, and of course that's your wife.
Yes.
Your wife, Erin, and you guys have been great with, you know, really committing to this cause. Talk to me about one of the examples of a veteran, why they got this bad paper discharge and why they really shouldn't have and why it prohibited them from getting the services that they really need.
The bad paper discharges, the thing that I think affected my wife and I the most when we were learning about this is that so many of these instances, the conduct that got them the bad paper discharge could be directly traced back to their service. And a lot of times it was the result of a serviceman or woman trying to cope with PTS or a TBI, maybe a substance abuse issue, self-medicating. There's an instance of somebody who was an intelligence officer in I believe it was Afghanistan, and he got PTS after seeing some of the things that he saw and was about to transition out of the military, was stop lost, and ended up, you know, basically trying to cope with that, having to go back, seeing, you know, and you know, self-medicating with, you know, prescription medication and alcohol. And, you know, next thing you know, You know, he's kicked out of the military with a bad paper discharge. And too often, it has to be stated that we were just advocating on those cases, the men and women whose alleged misconduct is directly traced back to their combat experience, their military service. There are, you know, cases of dishonorable discharges that have nothing to do with this, and that's not what we're talking about. But, you know, originally the GI Bill, when it was set up in 1944 after World War II, these men and women, everybody with any discharge other than a dishonorable discharge as a result of a courts martial would be eligible for VA benefits. And, you know, right now the appeals process for these men and women to appeal their discharge status, it takes years, 3, 4, 5 years in some cases, where they're waiting without any benefits, without any mental health support, without any, you know, general healthcare support. We just felt like at a time when we're still losing 20 men and women a day to suicide, military veterans a day to suicide, that this is something that maybe need to be talked about a little bit more. And in the months since then, it's almost been a year since we wrote that op-ed, we've seen the needle move a little bit on bad paper issues. Last December, the Fairness for Vets Act was passed. Now there is required screening when a military veteran is released from the military. Prior to their release, they're screened by a mental health board. So if they have any issues, mental health issues or general health issues that stem directly from their service, they will get treatment for it.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully this is it's a good starting point.
Well, really appreciate you lobbying for that, because you were out in front of it, as you'd mentioned, the piece of legislation that went through about December, whatever, is going to look at that. And in your experience, Nick, too, I mean, you've been with the special operations community, you know, probably disproportionately affected by some of these issues.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when people are still in, right? So in the intelligence community, most of us have like a TSSCI clearance, which is at the higher echelon. But even every operator has to have at least a secret clearance. And when I was in, if you were to come forward and admit that you are experiencing symptoms of post-traumatic stress or anything like that, you could lose your security clearance. And so that kept a lot of guys quiet.
I was going to say, and then guys bottling it up.
Yeah, guys bottle up and they're, you know, amazing on the battlefield, doing great work. And then they come home and their home life is a mess. You know, it's just awful and it just builds and snowballs. And fortunately, that has since been changed. But you do have people that have experienced that, you know, no fault of their own.
Sure.
You know, they did what their nation asked, and then they're left out in the cold. And me personally, I get all my healthcare through the VA, and I would be in a really bad spot if I didn't have that, right? And to deny that to men and women that serve bravely and become victims of their own circumstance. And, you know, it's easy for people to judge. And again, we're talking about these folks that are not dishonorably discharged for bad behavior, inappropriate conduct, right? These are people that,
Sean just
mentioned. It's easy to cast judgment, but when you're in that dark spot, right? Like, you're not thinking necessarily in a rational way.
Mm-hmm.
And people do things that can impact the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And it's not fair when you have, especially young men and women that don't have those coping skills, that fall victim to this and do something and now they're adrift, right? So,
I thought
horrible.
From the second I saw it on ESPN, I thanked you for doing that. And you were still with Oakland then, so I was technically rooting against you, but I still was like, this guy's all right. I mean, you know. I'm really glad we picked you up and brought you here to Washington. So thank you very much, guys. Wrapping it up, what else did I want to ask? Oh, yeah, my brother-in-law told me to ask you this. Is it ever purposeful you hit the batter? I mean, we're really, and I know this is a podcast and you might not want to go on record and say this, but for the record, not a whole lot of people listen to this podcast. So if you reveal anything here, not too many people will find out. No, but I mean, how often is it that you want to edge the guy off the plate a little bit? Or I mean,
It's
real, right?
Yeah. So this is one of those like unwritten rules of baseball people talk about all the time. Like, the game is supposed to police itself, right? Like, there are things that are done throughout the course of a game where you can send a message to another team or maybe retaliate for something that happened earlier in the game or maybe in a previous matchup or something like that. And, you know, so If anybody's listening to this, we need to write those unwritten rules down so that we're all on the same page. That would be a huge help. But there are times where it's appropriate to send a message, I think, where, you you have to hit a guy. And that sounds, doesn't that sound ridiculous? Like,
no, I think it's,
that sounds like this super macho, like, you know, like, yeah, you know, sometimes you just gotta like hit a guy, you know? but no, like you have to protect your players. If there's an instance where the other team has hit a number of your guys on purpose or otherwise, if there's a situation where a guy on the other team does a dirty slide, maybe into second base to try to break up a double play that risks injuring one of your players, you know, it kind of also has to be a perfect storm where the situation that you're pitching in has to be the right situation. Because, you know, you're going to put a guy on base, you know, so it can't be in a close game.
You don't want to give up the game just to make them right. just to make prove a point. Your point.
Yeah. And so
that makes sense.
And there's a way to do it. If you can't throw up around the neck, head or shoulders, it has to be, you want it to be around the ribs or the, you know, the belt, the midsection area, the meaty area.
I love it, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean,
all right, Major League, if you're listening, we should document this in the rules and just update. Yeah. I mean, look, if they can,
but it should end right there.
Yeah, no charging the mound
right there.
No.
And too often the case is that the, you know, the other team takes exception to that. And then they throw out another guy. And I think that's what we've seen. That's when you get these fights. That's when you get these long suspensions, when, it escalates to a point where the last word has been said, but then the other team feels like they need to get the last word in. And, you know, I mean, enough's enough.
Super cool, man. Well, I really appreciate you saying that, man. I've actually never talked to a pro ball player about this. So I'm just honored we got to do it. I'll throw this out there too. Maybe a penalty box, take a cue from hockey. And if it gets bad enough, you guys can just get to, you know, just throw down and then you get 2 minutes to sit out and then we're done. Okay. We can move on with the stinking game. All right. Let me see. We're going to plug real quick, looking ahead. Chalk Talk with Grant and Danny from 106.7 The Fan. You guys are doing something soon. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're just going to get together, do a little Q&A at DC Improv. I believe it's June 6th.
Okay.
At 7 o'clock, we're just going to kind of talk sports and hopefully a little Star Wars. I don't know. I really don't know what we're going to talk about, so you got to come check it out.
Nice, nice. Yeah. And you're a Star Wars geek, too.
Yeah, I'm a geek. Yeah, I'm a big geek. If the glasses didn't give it away. Oh, we're on radio, but
no, I'm going to take a picture.
I look like a geek.
No, you know who you look like, and I'm going to take a picture of this because I saw this in the Washington Post recently.
But
did somebody? Is that really a true story? Did somebody really think you were Seth Rogen on the subway?
No, they didn't think I was Seth Rogen. But all right, the whole story. I got to tell the whole story. Okay, so this is right after the season. We were still here in DC. There was a party at the stadium for all of the workers who work at Nats Park, the security guards, the vendors, the ushers. They were having like this big party. My wife and I went over to say thank you. We spent some time there, talking to some people, but then we went out, for a date. I think we were going to dinner or something. The rest of the night after is a blur because of this, but we were taking the Metro and, there was a group of like teenagers. One of them came up to me and he was like, "Hey, you know who you look like?" And this is like right after the playoffs. So we'd been getting a lot of attention. I'd just done like a meet and greet at the stadium. I was in like that mindset where I was like, "Hey, yeah, nice to meet you." You know, and so I thought this kid was going to be like, "Hey, you know who you look like? You look like that pitcher for the Nationals or something like that." And I was like, "Who?" And he goes, "Seth Rogen." And like my wife was like, she started dying laughing. She was like, "You should have seen your face, because like for a second you thought you were famous. Like you thought you had been like recognized in public, you know, like by like some teenagers. Like, you know, it's right after the playoffs. You've just been on national TV a bunch. Like, yeah, you're feeling good about yourself."
Right. Yeah. Right.
And she was like, "You should have seen your face, because you went from being like, you know, like had like your chest out and feeling like all cool. And then like he said like somebody else's name and you were just like, what?" and I just kind of stood there. She was cracking up. The kids were dying laughing. I guess it's like a, I don't know if it's a joke on Seth Rogen or me at this point, but they're cracking up. They're like running up the escalator, like dying laughing. And I'm just standing on the platform like, man, this train cannot come soon enough. Like, you know.
Oh man, I'm so glad I asked. But your comedy chops are on point, because that was a pretty good story. I like it. I like everything you guys both do. Nick, Stubble and Stash, former Marsoc guy, man, thank you as always for coming by. And Sean, great to meet you, man. Best of luck. I broke my heart last October. Come on now. This year, let's go a little further because I loved seeing you pitch. I loved it when you come in and close. And, you know, baseball, dude, it's just it's such a thrill to watch. And I thank you for what you do on the field and, most importantly, what you do for veterans off the field.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Special thanks for this episode. Go to Walter Johnson High School in Bethesda, Maryland for teaching me history and helping me remember the impact of Doolittle's raid. Lieutenant Commander Jimmy Doolittle and the crew that bombed Tokyo. Thank you very much. Also, special thanks to the Washington Nationals and Sean Doolittle himself. They play right up the street from the studios where we are recording this in Washington, D.C. Go Nats! Metallica. Have loved the music lifelong. Thank you for being a part of the entrance for Sean Doolittle every time he takes the mound and for the clip we used during this podcast. Would also love to extend a hand out to the members of Metallica and say that we would love to have you in the studio sometime soon. More special thanks to Nick Carnese of Stubble and Stash. You can find those grooming products at stubbleandstash.com. And a special shout out to all the Marsoc Warrior brothers out there. Thank you for everything you do. For ConnectingVets.com, I'm Phil Briggs, and I'll talk to you again on another episode of Vet Story.